세바스레바야.
옴
나모 바그베체 바스레바야.
옴 나모
바그베체 바스레바야.
나라야나마스키야.
나람 자이바 나로트맘.
나람 자이바 나로트맘.
예빔 사스와틴 비아삼.
예빔 사스와틴 비아삼.
사토 자야 무디라얏. 나시타 프라예슈와 바드레슈.
나시타 프라예슈와 바드레슈.
니티암 바가바타 세바야.
니티암 바가바타 세바야.
바가바티 유타마슬로케.
바티르 바바티
나이스티키.
오마기안테
미란다시아 게난제나 시라카야 착슈르 밀리탄디나 타스마이 시 구르베 나마하. Welcome everyone to this morning's Srimad Bhagavatam class. Very honored to be here after a long time, back with all of you. So today we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam Canto 3, Chapter 3, The Lord's Pastimes Out of Vrindavan. We're covering texts 11 to 13. So we'll recite text 11. Shambaram dividam banam.
Shambaram dividam banam.
Muram balbalam eva cha.
Muram balbalam eva cha.
Anyams cha danta vakradin.
Anyams cha danta vakradin.
Avadhit kams cha ghatayat. Sambaram dvividam banam.
Sambaram dvividam banam.
Muram balbalam eva cha.
Muram balbalam eva cha.
Anyams cha danta vakradin.
Anyams cha danta vakradin.
Avadhit kams cha ghatayat.
Avadhit kams cha ghatayat.
Please chant.
Sambaram dvividam banam.
Sambaram
dividam
banam. Moram balbalam eva cha.
Anyam cha danta vakradin.
Sambaram dividam banam.
Sambaram dividam banam.
See the word for word. Shambaram.
Shambaram.
Shambara.
Shambara.
Dvividam.
Dvividam.
Dvivida.
Dvivida.
Banam.
Banam.
Bana.
Bana.
Muram.
Mura.
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 Balvalam.
Balvalam.
Balvala.
Balvala.
Eva cha.
Eva cha.
As also.
As also.
Anyan.
Anyan.
Others.
Others.
Cha.
Cha.
Also.
Also.
Dantavakra adin.
Like
Dantavakra and others.
Avadhit.
Killed.
Kancha.
And many others.
And many others.
Ghatayat.
Caused to be killed.
Translation by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Of kings like Shambara, Dvivida, Bana, Mura, Balvala, and many other demons, such as Dantavakra, some he killed himself, and some he caused to be killed by others, Sri Baladev, etc. So I'll go ahead and read the next two. Ata te vratriputranam pakshayo patitan ritam chachala bhukuru kshetram yesham apatatam balai. Translation. Then, O Vidur, the Lord calls all the kings, both the enemies and those on the side of your fighting nephews, to be killed in the battle of Kurukshetra. All those kings were so great and strong that the earth seemed to shake as they traversed the war field. And then 13.
Sakarna dusha shena sobalanam kumantra pakena hata shriyayusham suryodam sanucharam shayanam bagnorum urvam nanananda
pashyam. Translation and purport. Duryodhana was bereft of his fortune and duration of life because of the intricacy of ill advice given by Karna, Dushasana, and Sobala. When he lay on the ground with his followers, his thighs broken, although he was powerful, the Lord was not happy to see the scene. Report. The fall of Duryodhana, the leading son of Dhritarashtra, was not pleasing to the Lord. Although he was on the side of Arjuna, and it was he who advised Bhima how to break the thighs of Duryodhana while the fighting was going on. The Lord is constrained to award punishment upon the wrongdoer, but he is not happy to award such punishments because the living entities are originally his parts and parcels. He is harder than the thunderbolt for the wrongdoer and softer than the rose for the faithful. The wrongdoer is misled by bad associates and by ill advice, which is against the established principles of the Lord's order, and thus he becomes subject to punishment. The surest path to happiness is to live by the principles laid down by the Lord and not disobey his established laws, which are enacted in the Vedas and the Puranas for the forgetful living entities. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So, this chapter is all about Krishna's pastimes outside of Vrindavan. Previous was Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan. So, Uddhava is narrating these pastimes to Vidura, on Vidura's request, just before Uddhava will send Vidura over to Maitreya to hear all instructions from Maitreya that will fill up the rest of the third and fourth cantos. But we saw how Uddhava was very ecstatic to be able to tell these pastimes. And when Vidura asked him to speak about Krishna, then Uddhava just went into a trance of remembrance. And it's described there how he went to the spiritual world in his mind, and then after some time he came back to the human sphere to speak these pastimes. So like in his mind he just, all the pastimes of Krishna, many of which he was part of, because they were contemporaries and they were also very good friends. Uddhava was a very intimate associate with Krishna, very trusted friend and minister and ally. So these narrations, you can just imagine the emotions, you know, while Uddhava is speaking these pastimes. And he's getting into a personal element here, that he's not just listing all the demons that Krishna killed or had caused to be killed, but he's talking about Krishna's mood. And that Krishna's loving mood, that he didn't like to kill the demons. You know, he wasn't happy to kill the demons or to watch other, you know, his assistants kill the demons. He doesn't like to see anyone suffer, even demons. So, yeah, but these pastimes, see, Krishna has different types of pastimes. Basically, two types of pastimes that Krishna has. One type is his Nitya Lila, which is eternal or regular pastimes, like the Ashtakaliya Lila. So these things, they happen when Krishna comes to the material world, performs his pastimes, his Vrindavan pastimes in Bhoma Vrindavan. And the same pastimes go on eternally every day in Goloka Vrindavan. So he always, you know, Mother Yashoda will wake him up in the morning and engage the servants in dressing, bathing him and dressing him and decorating him. And then he'll have breakfast, he'll milk the cows, he'll go out to the pasturing grounds with his cowherd boys and engage in all kinds of sporting activities there. And then around noontime, he'll wander off to Radhakund and meet the gopis there, and they'll have all kinds of pastimes, and swinging and water sports and those types of things. And then in the afternoon, he'll go home, and then he'll be received by Mother Yashoda, by Nanda Maharaj, all the elderly residents of the village with so much love and affection. And then he'll again milk the cows and come in for his evening meal. And then he'll have some evening entertainment with Nanda and the cowherd men. And then Mother Yashoda will put him to bed very sweetly. And then he'll slip away back to the forest of Vrindavan to meet the gopis for nighttime pastimes, wandering along the bank of the Yamuna or designated places, Rasa Lila and so forth. And then he'll be woken up just before sunrise to go back home to his bed so that Mother Yashoda can wake him up the next morning. So this is Krishna's Nitya Lila. And then there are other pastimes which are called Naimitika Lila, which means occasional pastimes. So the killing of the demons is in the category of Naimitika Lila. These, they're not eternal daily pastimes of Krishna. And although in Goloka there are, these pastimes exist, but not in the same way. Because sometimes it's said that there aren't demons in the spiritual world. But there are rumors of demons, or sometimes, you know, you hear in Brihad Bhagavatamrita about how there are actual pastimes of demons in Goloka, but it's more like, it's not actual demons, but it's more like Yoga Maya creates a situation in which there seem to be demons, and so Krishna can enjoy pastimes of rescuing the devotees, and because it's exciting, it adds a drama to the day, you know, when these things happen. But there's no actual danger, nobody's actually, there's not actually like a, you know, demoniac soul there that's getting killed and leaving their body and all that. So, yeah, because everything in Goloka is eternal. So no one's getting killed. But these things go on in the material world, because in the material world there are plenty of demons. And that's what this material world is for. It's for the demons. People with demoniac mentality. So since the beginning of creation, that was one of the features of creation, is that the birth of demons take place, the creation of so many dynasties of demons. And you know, one of the first progenitors was Kashyapa Muni, and from him, you know, he married Diti, and she gave birth to the Daityas, or she gave birth to Aditi, and gave birth to the Adityas, who are the demigods. She gave birth to the demigods. But he also had another wife, Diti, who gave birth to the demons, and we know, like Hiranyaksha, Hiranyakashipu, and others. And he also married what's her name, Danu, and she gave birth to the Danavas. So the Danavas was another dynasty of demons, and they then, you know, had so many children who were demons. And they also, when they left their bodies, they came back again. Like, for example, Viprachitti was a big, bad demon, son of Kashyapa and Danu. And after he was killed, he came back as Jarasandha. So then later he was killed by Bhima. So like this, the demons are appearing again and again. And it's actually an essential feature in this world that there have to be demons, because there has to, because it's a place of suffering. There has to be suffering, there have to be antagonistic elements that bother us and disturb us and create fear and distress, so that we can realize that this is not our place, this is not our home. And, you know, after the demigods and demons churned the milk ocean, and the demigods became very powerful after drinking the somarasa, then they just started, you know, slaughtering all the demons. And at that time, there was an intervention, and they were told to stop. They said, you can't kill all the demons, you have to leave a few, otherwise the Lord's purpose in the creation is not going to be fulfilled. There need to be some demons, in other words, in this world. And that's why it is like it is. But then there are times when there's an excessive amount of demons, like the situation just before Mother Earth took the form of a cow, and she appealed to, she went to the banks of the ocean of milk and appealed to Lord Vishnu that, you know, the earth is overburdened by the, you know, military phalanxes of so many demons, and it's just weighing down on me so heavily that it's becoming unbearable. So please, you know, Lord Vishnu, you're the maintainer of the universe. The universe is in big trouble. We can barely endure the situation any longer. Please come and do something. So then that appeal precipitated Krishna's advent in the world. And that was one of his express purposes, that Vinashaya Chadushkritam, that he comes to annihilate the miscreants. So there are also two types of demons, that there are some demons that are just out and out materialistic atheists, antagonistic demons that want to kill Krishna and, you know, cause so much trouble to Krishna's devotees. And then there are other demons who are actually transcendental demons. They're actually devotees who are playing the role of demons for a particular reason. Either they were cursed or some pastime or some backstory like that. So, yeah, the transcendental demons are like Jaya Vijay incarnations. Hiranyaksha, Hiranyakashipu, Shishupal, Dantavakra, Ravana, Kumbhakarna. And there's also Ritrasura, who is a devotee who was cursed to become a demon. So Ritrasura is interesting because although he looks like a demon and he kind of acts like a demon, but he's always got the heart of a devotee. Whereas you don't really see that with Hiranyakashipu and others. So there's these two different categories of demons. So Krishna kills the demons, or he causes them to be killed. That's what's mentioned here. And some specific demons are mentioned. So there's Shambhara. Shambhara was actually, he was killed by Pradyumna. He was destined to be killed by Pradyumna, and he knew of that. So when Pradyumna was born, when he was a little baby, he captured him and he threw him in the ocean. And then the baby was swallowed whole by a large fish, which was later caught and delivered to the royal kitchen to be cooked for the king. But then when the cook cut open the fish, he saw there's a beautiful baby in here, and the baby was still alive. So he just gave the baby to Mayavati. And then later he grew up, and she realized that this was actually Cupid, her husband from a past life. And so, but that child grew up to be Pradyumna and did end up killing Shambhara. So that's the pastime of Shambhara. And then Dvivida is a famous gorilla from Vrindavan Leela, that he showed up with when Balaram was about to enjoy pastimes with his gopis. This Dvivida started, he started off just kind of joking and sort of flirting with the gopis, and at first they were just, you know, laughing and thinking it was funny and entertaining, but then he started becoming very lewd and rude and, you know, tugging at their cloth and lifting up his loincloth or whatever and showing them parts of his body that should have been kept private. And so Balaram said, this is not happening, and he just killed Dravida after a big fight. Then Banasura, he's the one who kidnapped 16,000 princesses and kept them captive. So when Krishna went to free the priest, I'm confusing him with Bomasura. Banasura is the one who, his daughter Usha, her friend kidnapped Krishna's grandson Aniruddha and brought him to the palace because Usha was in love with this boy whom she'd never met but she had a dream about. And so when Banasura discovered that this young man was living in the women's quarters of the palace and having intimate relationships with his daughter, he got very upset about it and he went there to kill Aniruddha. So there was a fight between Banasura and Aniruddha, which Aniruddha was, he was just a young man. He wasn't very experienced at fighting. So he couldn't defeat Banasura, but Krishna came to the rescue and he defeated Banasura, but he didn't kill him because Banasura was a descendant of Prahlad Maharaj. And the Lord had promised Prahlad that he wouldn't kill any of his descendants. So he didn't actually kill Banasura. Then Mura is the one who, he was an ally of Bomasura. So Bomasura is the one who kidnapped the 16,000 princesses and kept them. So when Krishna went to free those princesses, then Bomasura had arranged all these different layers of security around his palace, and one of those layers of security was this demon Mura, who was kind of an ugly demon with five heads. And so when Krishna was penetrating one by one the different layers of security, he came to Mura, and Mura just ran up into the sky and started attacking him. But Krishna just took his Sudarshan Chakra out and cut off all five of his heads, and that was the end of Mura. And then Balvala was a demon who would go to the wherever Brahmins were performing sacrifices, and he would just basically contaminate the sacrificial arena by, spitting on it and passing urine and stool around the place and just spoil everything. So the Brahmins were really frustrated, and finally Krishna came, and he just... when he came, Balavala tried to attack him with his club, but Krishna took out his own Komodaki club and just smashed him in the chest and shattered his heart. And then the last one mentioned here in this text 11 is Dantavakra. His name literally means crooked teeth, old crooked teeth. So this is the last demon that Krishna killed. And Dantavakra... he was one of the incarnations of Jaya and Vijaya. He was the last incarnation of, I think, Vijaya. And he had insulted Krishna. And when Krishna came, he insulted Krishna and he hit him in the head with his club. But it didn't faze Krishna at all. And again, Krishna, he took out his club and hit him. So, he's the one that when he hit him in the chest, it's described that his heart shattered by the blow of Krishna's club. So you can see that some of these demons listed here were killed by others, right? Like by Balaram, by Pradyumna, some were killed by Krishna. And likewise in the next verse, he's talking about all the kings on the battle of Kurukshetra. So on both sides, it's not that everyone on Arjuna's side was necessarily a good guy. Was necessarily a saint. Some of them also were little demoniacs. So they were killed in the Battle of Kurukshetra, and many different personalities were engaged in killing. All different soldiers were killing different demons and like that. So, and we know that the last verse specifically mentioned about Duryodhana. So Duryodhana was killed by Bhima. With the help of Krishna, he said, "You got to hit him below the belt in the thigh. The only place where he's vulnerable is his thigh." So Bhima hit him in the thigh, and that was the end of him. So it's interesting how Krishna kills all these demons, and or he, you know, empowers others to kill them, instructs them how to kill them, but he's not happy. And Prabhupada says that he wasn't pleased, although he was that it was not pleasing to the Lord. And it says the Lord is constrained to award punishment upon the wrongdoer. That was interesting language, because it constrained means like you don't have freedom to do what you actually want. You're under somebody else's constraints. But the Lord is, you know, Swarat, he's independent. So how is he constrained by anyone? But of course he's constrained by his own principles, his own promises, that he promises to protect his devotees and like that. So sometimes, you know, we constrain ourselves. You know, we may not, for example, just, you know, the things that we do, like waking up early in the morning, we don't always feel like waking up, but we're like, no, waking up, especially during Kartik. Maybe some of you have taken extra vows during Kartik to do things that, you know, you may not always feel like doing, and maybe you're not used to doing, but you've put a constraint on yourself that I'm not going to eat sweets, or I'm not going to, you know, spend more than 1 hour a day on social media, or something like that. You know, we might constrain ourselves for higher purposes. So in the same way, Krishna constrains himself. It's not that he's forced, but he decides that he's going to constrain himself and act according to this principle of punishing wrongdoers. But he's not happy to do this. But he does it actually for their benefit. Just like a father may have many children, and you know, if one of the children is obedient and well behaved, then, you know, he gives them all facility. But if another one is disobedient and rebellious, then he needs to constrain them. He needs to, you know, enforce some discipline for the benefit of the other, to correct them. So Krishna says that he says, "Aham bija pradapita," that I am the seed-giving father of all living entities, and so he loves all living entities, just like a father loves his children. And any responsible, loving father will correct the children when they do wrong, will, you know, punish them in appropriate ways in order to stop them from doing the misbehavior again. So parents generally don't like doing that. That's like the worst part of being a parent, is, you know, having to punish your children. Nobody likes to do that. And even I think Srila Prabhupada would say that his father, Gaur Mohan Day, would always apologize to him, you know, "Please forgive me, but I have to punish you. You know, I don't want to do this, but it's my duty. But please, you know, don't take it personally. Please forgive me. I have to do my duty, and I have to punish you because you've misbehaved." So it's kind of like that. That's Krishna's mood when he kills the demons. He's like, "I don't really want to do this, but you kind of put me in a position where I have to do this because it's my duty to punish the wrongdoers, and you've done wrong, so I have to punish you. Sorry." But he does it. So, yeah, as far as we're concerned, this also applies to us, because in Kali Yuga, the demons and the demigods are in the same body. We also have demoniac propensities that rear their ugly heads sometimes, and Krishna has to kill those demoniac propensities in different ways. And sometimes he does it personally, and sometimes he does it through other agents, and sometimes he causes it to be done through, you know, situations. So of course he's not really killing anything per se, but it's just a question of purification or removal of anarthas, which are adverse to our real self-interest, which are obstacles to our coming closer to Krishna. So, yeah, one way that he does that personally is by through the holy names. When we chant the holy names, we're interacting with Krishna, and the holy name has all the potencies of Krishna. And the holy name has this really intense purifying potency, because Krishna is all pure. His holy names are all pure, and when we contact them, especially purely, you know, attentively and with the right mood and attitude towards chanting, then the Holy Name acts powerfully to purify our hearts of these many demoniac propensities and mentalities or attitudes that destroy our devotional, that threaten to destroy our devotional service. So that's one way that he does it personally. And then he also engages others to do it. He puts it in association with devotees who will bring these, will bring out our anarthas, you know, cause our anarthas to manifest in certain ways. You know, that's kind of like one of the glories of living in the association of the devotees is, you know, it's kind of like the, we call it the rock tumbler effect, that we all come in with rough edges. You take just rough rocks, they're just all bumpy and scratchy, and you put them in the rock tumbler, and it just, you know, tumbles them around, and they basically, the rough edges sand the rough edges, they're, all the rough edges sand the rough and grind the rough edges off the other rocks. So we come into association of devotees, and we all have our rough edges, but through our interaction, sometimes, you know, my rough edges rub the wrong way against your rough edges, and it's a little painful and irritating. But, you know, and maybe some emotions arise, there's conflict, there's tension, whatever, but we just try to work it out and keep serving together and keep doing our sadhana, and gradually the rough edges get smooth. So that's actually, next time a devotee irritates you, understand that actually they're doing you a favor. They're smoothing off your rough edges. They're just, that grating feeling is like, yeah, helping me smooth off this rough edge that I have. Because if I was a pure devotee, this wouldn't bother me. So, yeah. So sometimes he engages others. But in any case, Krishna doesn't enjoy when we suffer. You know, he doesn't enjoy when there are conflicts between devotees. He doesn't enjoy when you know, we're going through difficulties, because sometimes when anarthas rear their ugly heads, they can be very troubling. They can make us have self-doubts. They can make us feel depressed and hopeless. But, yeah, so Krishna doesn't like to see us in that situation, but he gives us the strength to be able to take more shelter of him during those circumstances. So we see this also with the demons, with the out-and-out demons that Krishna kills. He doesn't like doing it, but he does it in a way that they're elevated. So Krishna also, he doesn't like to make us go through all the pains of anartha nivritti, but he does so in a way that elevates us. I mean, for the purpose, for the sole purpose of elevating us. So that's actually Krishna's intention, and that's how we can appreciate all of these as acts of love, even though it looks like killing or causing distress or pain to certain living entities. They're all acts of love because it's all for everyone's ultimate benefit. So we should have faith in that. And so it says here that the surest path to happiness is to live by the principles laid down by the Lord and not disobey his established laws. Yeah, so it's disobedience to the laws of the Lord that causes us to be punished and causes the Lord to be unhappy and also causes us to be unhappy. So then somebody could ask, well, if we're anandamaya vyasat, if we're actually like our nature is to search out for happiness, then why do we keep doing things that actually just cause nothing but unhappiness to ourselves and to the Lord? Why are we just so fixed on bringing about unhappiness if we're meant for, if our purpose is to find happiness? It just doesn't make sense. It's just counterproductive to our self-interest. And this is similar to the question that Arjuna asked in the Bhagavad Gita, where he said, what is it that causes people to, you know, to commit sinful activities, even unwillingly, as if by force? And Krishna says that it's lust only that's born from the mode of passion, which is the all-devouring sinful enemy of this world. So, yeah. It's our lust, it's our desire to enjoy separately from Krishna, and to be independent and to carve our own path in life, to do things, you know, my way. Who cares about what Krishna and the scriptures say about how to live? I'm going to do things my way because I know myself and I know what I need and I know how to get it and I know how to be happy. And yeah, so that kind of mentality leads us into all kinds of trouble. But then one can think, well, where does lust come from? How did we end up with this lust? Because it's not really our nature. It's just a covering. It's just an anartha. And so in this verse 13, Uddhava sheds a little light on that. He says that Duryodhana, he was bereft of his good fortune and duration of life because of the intricacy of ill advice given by Karna, Dushasana, and Sobala. So he's making Duryodhana to be almost like an innocent person, you know? Because Duryodhana, from the day he was born, you know, all the omens were there that this was bad, the jackals were howling and all kinds of things were going on, and everyone was immediately advising Dhritarashtra, just get rid of this kid, just, you know, throw him away, he's going to cause so much trouble, just look at the omens. But here it's giving us the impression that Duryodhana, he was fortunate in many ways, actually, but because of bad association with Karna, Dushasana, Sobala is actually Shakuni, the one who helped Duryodhana to cheat at dice. So these are the big three baddies that were the bad influence on Duryodhana that led to Duryodhana's corruption and sinful activities and offenses towards the Pandavas and ultimately his death. So this is how lust comes upon us. This is how we become covered by all these anarthas. And this is how we develop demoniac propensities, is through bad association. Because originally we're all Krishna conscious entities, but it's due to contact with matter, with material nature, since time immemorial, that we've acquired these demoniac qualities. So what does it mean, contact with material nature? It's not that, you know, earth, water, fire, air, ether, it's not that the elements of material nature have contaminated us, but it's association with jivas, you know, with bad with bad souls, with conditioned souls who are demoniac, that by their association we develop those qualities. So that's how, you know, our natural love for Krishna became transformed into lust by the touch of people who are conditioned by the lower modes of passion and ignorance. So we have to be very careful with our association, because it can that kind of bad association can lead us to become more demoniac and just suffer more. And we should maintain good association with devotees who are inspiring, who set good examples, who encourage us, who are emblems of good qualities, all the 26 qualities of devotees. And that way we can transform the lust that's dragging us to, you know, act in demoniac ways sometimes, to transform that lust back into love. And then we can live in a way that's pleasing to Krishna and avoid being punished by Krishna. We can stop making Krishna have to punish us, because Krishna doesn't like to punish us. So if we want Krishna to be happy, then we have to live in a way that he doesn't have to perform the unpleasant burden of punishing us. And so that's not just for our benefit, but it's also for Krishna's benefit, which is, of course, ultimately for our benefit, because only when Krishna is happy are we going to be happy. So this is what we can learn here from these verses here about how Krishna deals with devotees, sometimes killing them personally, sometimes engaging others in his pastimes outside of Vrindavan, also in his pastimes in our lives right here in the present day, and how Krishna doesn't like doing this. So if we want to make Krishna happy, then we should be obedient followers of Krishna through disciplic succession, upholding the principles and the practices given to us by our founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada, and keeping good association. And then we will also be happy. All right, so are there any questions or comments on these points? Mother Ragatmika.
Thank you, Prabhupada Priya, for coming and giving class again here. It's been a long time. Two things. What does Diti mean? Because Aditi, she begot asuras. Diti begot devotees.
Yeah. The actual Sanskrit meaning of diti?
Yeah.
I'm not sure. Any Sanskrit scholars, Bhagavan, would you know?
Asuric mood.
What's that?
Asuric mood.
The Asuric mood. Yeah. Okay. So
diti means
non-Asuric mood. Yeah. Okay.
Makes sense. But Aditi is the begat. She begat Asuras.
The demigods. No, Aditi begat the demigods.
Okay. That's the twist. Okay. Yeah. Also, suffering. A question about suffering: is it actually purifying? Is all suffering purifying? It appears that one can go for lifetimes, and naturally, you're going to suffer through those lifetimes. But yet, but one doesn't come to wake up to the reality.
Yeah.
So is suffering always purifying, or it's not always purifying? Purifying meaning, does it rid one of any anarthas?
Mm-hmm.
Can it?
Well, it depends on how we take it. Suffering is meant to induce us to turn to Krishna, but the problem is that that's not what happens. That's not always what happens, right? So some people, when they're suffering, instead of turning to Krishna, which would actually be the means to, relieve them of their suffering, they indulge in sinful activities to try to escape. Like they're going through something really difficult, they can't handle it, so they'll just get intoxicated, they'll take drugs, they'll go on a shopping spree, they'll just indulge their senses or try to obliterate their consciousness through intoxication to try to make themselves feel better in the perverted ways, which doesn't really work. So, nor do they learn from the suffering. It just compounds the suffering. So that's what happens. When we don't take proper measures to deal with suffering, it just makes our suffering worse. And so ultimately, it may take many lifetimes, but it's meant to bring us to total desperation, where we'll turn to Krishna. Like, after trying everything, I've tried everything to make myself happy and nothing has worked. I'm just suffering more, I'm just getting more stressed, more miserable, more depressed. There has to be another way, like that. And then people will eventually turn to God. So what's being purified is the misconception that we can be happy in this world. So Krishna just has to keep hammering on the point that you can't be happy. Nope, that won't make you happy. That won't make you happy either. Nor will that, or that. So it's when we finally get to the end of our rope, and trying to be happy in this material world, then we're like, okay, all right, well, but there has to be happiness somewhere, so maybe in spiritual life.
So can we say it purifies our enjoying spirit?
Yeah.
It purifies us to some degree.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
But sometimes people suffer so much and they'll give up on being happy, but they won't, they'll just give up. They'll just be depressed and just stop trying to be happy anymore. They'll just be like, it's hopeless. I'll never be happy. There's no use trying. Everything that I try just makes me more miserable. So I'll just be, they just resign themselves to depression. So, mode of ignorance. That's why we need devotees, to go and tell people, look, you don't have to be unhappy. You don't have to be miserable. There's actually a clear pathway to happiness, and this is it. To give people hope, to give hope to the hopeless. Yes. Oh.
Well, is it also the suffering is there so that not only, to have that conception of this is not a good place for me, but isn't it also to change somebody's unwanted behavior so that, so they do have good qualities, even within this world? It's not just to change their misconception.
Yeah, yeah. For sure, yeah. I mean, that's the purpose of punishment, is that, like, the child does something bad, they punish them, that I'm punishing you because you did this, so that you don't do it anymore. So in the same way, yeah, that's what it's meant. Like karmic reactions, we get a certain reaction, which is usually suffering, But the reaction is designed in a way to curtail the mentality that led us to commit that particular wrong activity in the first place. Yeah. So it's purposeful, specifically purposeful, and also generally purposeful.
So it seems like those with a strong demoniac mentality, instead of reforming their behavior, they cause miseries to others. So I suppose that those who have some godly tendencies might turn towards, when they're suffering, turn towards righteousness and to God. And those who are demoniac, with the demoniac mentality, however that came about, they would probably go down deeper into the material pool, and that might even become real, real enemies of God.
Yeah.
So I suppose suffering will bring people to Krishna or separate people. It's living entities.
Yeah.
In a sense, in one sense.
Yeah, Krishna says that too in the Bhagavad Gita, right? He says that four kinds of pious people approach him. So one is the person in distress. So some people, when if they're pious and they're suffering, they'll approach Krishna. Others, if they're impious, they'll just become, you know, miscreants, and they won't surrender to Krishna. And then Krishna says that those who, you know, never approach me, then they take birth again and again in demoniac species of life.
At least for some of us, though, for some of us who are trying to get out of this material existence, it's at least when we get up there, when we return, we'll say, okay, I won't do that again. Lessons learned.
Yeah.
So it's a nice school, actually. It's a very tough school, but it's, you know?
Yeah.
At least we'll have learned our lessons, eh?
Yeah, this whole material existence is an educational institute for us to correct our...
Reformatory,
yeah, it's a prison.
Nice class. Nice to hear from you. The last verse, 13,
mm-hmm.
I thought it was one of the most attractive purport I heard in this chapter. I remember reading that many times because that question comes, does God hate bad people?
Mm-hmm.
And of course the verse does not directly say it, but I love the way Prabhupada put purport. That no, God does not hate anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why that line, I'm paraphrasing, the Prabhupada said that even though Krishna helped Bhima to kill Duryodhana, but then he was not happy about it.
Yeah.
So it's very difficult for everybody to understand, but if you think from that angle, that actually he doesn't hate anybody, but he doesn't support nefarious activities of demoniac nature.
Yeah. As much as he loves us, he's not going to let us off the hook when we do things wrong. That's what Prabhupada says.
Like the presentation.
Harder than the thunderbolt for the wrongdoer.
Yeah. You presented very well. On the previous verse, that Divida Gorilla,
mm-hmm.
you gave that side. There's another side of Divida Gorilla, because he was actually eternal associate of Lord Ramchandra. So question come, how come he comes as a demon or activities like demon?
Mm-hmm.
Because he hated Lakshman.
Mm-hmm.
So like for an example in Mahaprabhu's Leela, we were reading a couple of weeks back, that Minaketan Ramdas, when he was visiting, even Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, why he left his family, because of that. That his brother liked Lord Chaitanya, did not like Nityananda Prabhu.
Right.
Gunarnava Mishra. There are many examples like this, and Divida Gorilla is one. So we have to be very careful that we have to like, respect everybody according to their respective position. We cannot be favorable to someone and hate or resentment. Otherwise, we may be hanging life after life in a devotee community, but we may not get out of it.
That's a good point, yeah. Yeah, if we have bad feelings towards devotees, then we might end up being Divida Gorilla in the next life.
Yes.
Stita Dimani?
Okay.
Here comes the hard question.
So I can appreciate Pran's point that God doesn't hate us, but is it possible maybe
he's happy when some of us are suffering more than others? Oh, okay. But in one sense, he doesn't make anybody suffer. I mean, we do that all to ourselves. We do that ourselves. You know, the essential issue is our disconnect, because that's where the happiness is. Mm-hmm. And then everything kind of trips from that. Because ultimately, you know, there's a world of duality, happiness, and distress. You know, and I think like this Prabhu brought up, I mean, you know, maybe certain pious people, they get distressed and then they're motivated to come to Krishna, but that's only one out of four categories. You know, so then the thought is, I think that was about it, but I had another one.
But in that thought, you are the initiating cause.
Well, I mean, it's like
the sanctioning cause.
Well, he facilitates everything, but it's based on the desires.
Correct.
Because ultimately, rasa is desire. And so, you know, the whole program is to get our head in the heart, in the right spot, so we can engage in happiness. I mean, you know, it's, you know, suffering, it can be a motivating factor, I suppose, hopefully. Okay, here's my question. So, suffering can be a motivating factor in devotional service, in the world's full demand. Can we be, you know, purified by happiness too? Or can we only be purified
like,
when we're suffering?
Statistically, they've done studies on this, and it's been statistically shown that punishment is much more of a motivating factor than reward. Like if you tell people that, you know, if you, I mean, that's why we don't have that people who drive the speed limit don't get rewards for that, but people who break speed limit get punished.
They do. They get lower car insurance for it if they don't get caught.
Right, but it's not like a government program.
There's carrot and a stick. You know.
I'm just saying that, like, it's just a proven fact that people are more motivated to do the right thing out of fear of punishment rather
well,
than...
Well, it depends what class of people. Most people are sudras, according to Vedic culture, you know, yeah. And they're the ones who use the trash bags. But, you know, the sudras, they say, are motivated by fear. Whereas Vaishyas are motivated by profit, economic development, and Kshatriyas are motivated by, you know...
Power.
Well, you know, protection and glory and, you know, doing the right thing. And Brahmins are motivated by wisdom. So there's different classes, but if you're taking a survey of most people, they're like, you know, according to Vedic culture, there's a lot of people, a majority have a childish, you know, attitude, and fear would be a motivating factor. But Kshatriyas aren't motivated by fear. Real Kshatriyas aren't, so neither are Brahmins. So, you know, there's different classes of people. We're talking about Vedic culture. So I think the real issue is which one of them are using the wrong shopping bag.
I'm sure that Krishna arranges punishments that are specific to what people value. For example, if a Brahmin, to punish a Brahmin, you take away their knowledge, right? Like we saw that there is one disciple of Vyasadeva that his knowledge was taken away.
Is that saying that you can track more people with sugar than whatever the other part
was
saying?
What?
Hare Krishna.
Very nice class. You talked very nicely. Two questions, or one comment and a question. It's stated that when you reward good behavior, you get more good behavior. So I think this is the concept now in education. By rewarding good behavior, you know, it repeats itself more.
Right.
The question is, one would think like in the purer age there would be less powerful demons, but it seems like in the purer ages they're really powerful demons, really. You know, like you would think like in Kali you would get some real heavy demons, but we noticed like in the pure ages there were some real big demons. Is there any clue to that?
Well, in those days, I mean, just seems like, I mean, just from studying the scriptures and knowing a little bit about those times, it seems like everyone was a lot more powerful, and that everyone, here, the good, in Kali Yuga, everyone's just getting weaker. So the demons are weaker, the good people are weaker, everyone's just weak. Everyone's just like lazy, unlucky, misguided, and always disturbed. So that applies to the demons as well. It's not that the devotees are disturbed and the demons are like totally focused and totally like motivated all the time. You know, they're also lazy and weak and disturbed. And So they can't do their demonic activities very well either. But in Satyayuga, people were like, the only thing is that the demons were really demons. They were just out and out demons, you know? And and they were powerful. And they knew how to get power by performing yajnas, by giving charity. The demons would follow these Vedic processes to, you know, misuse the principles of the Veda, the practices of the Vedas, to really like get supernatural powers for themselves. Nowadays, nobody knows all these this technology for how to actually get power and influence and things.
Yeah, and they usually get a lot of power from Brahma and Shiva.
Yeah.
I just recalled the statement that pain is inevitable, but suffering is optional.
Mm,
so I think that's what makes the difference in the adverse situation.
Mm-hmm.
Because whether you're, in other words, there's two ways to take pain. One is to, you know, feel the victim and all that. And the other is to be grateful and see it as Krishna's mercy or God's, you know, way of steering you right. You know, it's two different ways you can take it. So suffering is optional.
Yeah, yeah, there's the purport to Srimad Bhagavatam text 10.14.8, where it's written that in the life of a devotee, all suffering is mercy. It's just the, the remedial measure administered by the Lord for the benefit of the devotee, to relieve the last vestiges of the enjoying mentality. So whenever we suffer, we should just be grateful that this is Krishna. He's given me a little punishment. It seems like a karmic reaction, but actually this is the Lord. He's personally administering this experience to free me from my material attachments, to extricate me from my entanglements, to root out my deep-rooted desires so that I can totally let go of material existence and hold on to his lotus feet with two hands, full strength, and without any deviation. So, yeah, if we understand our suffering with gratitude like that, with actually thanking Krishna. Thank you, Krishna, for giving me this situation so that I can advance, so that I can realize that this world's not my place. Totally let go to my attachments and just be very clear in my goals here. Then we can go forward. We can make a lot of progress through suffering. Okay? Oh, I guess it's time for me to stop. Grantra Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Yeah, that's awesome.